Yo, yo, yo. Welcome back to the Further Your Lifestyle podcast, conversations on lifestyle, passions, and hustles. My name's Chris Furlong. I'm your host, and I'm super excited to be back here having the conversation with you. Now, today, I'm even more thrilled to introduce you to our guest, and that is Karina Tucci, the owner and founder of Wildcut Designs. And this is what you get when you combine a love and passion for gemstones and sustainable jewelry. And every creation that she does is made to order and is handmade in order to minimize the footprint left to the environment. In this episode, we chat about the journey of life and how there's many decisions that come our way. And in order to find, I guess, our passions, our dreams, we need to cultivate and go through a process to make that happen. For Karina, that meant she had to make a bit of an early change early in her career, but it also left her with a new curiosity turned passion in becoming obsessed and totally amazed by gemstones and all things gemology. Years later of study, education, experience, and a lot of hard work, here she is now back with her new business, Wildcut Designs, where she's doing some amazing and magical things in creating, I guess, sustainable, ethical, and just really, really beautiful handmade jewelry. What I love about this episode so much is it's just real. It's raw. We chat all things of her journey to building out Wildcut Designs, the industry of gemstones, jewelry, gemology, all that jazz. So it's a little different, something that I probably wouldn't normally touch on. But when I first found Wildcut Designs and Karina and what she was doing, I was just totally blown away. And it's a really magical brand. So what I would encourage you, if you haven't checked it out, press pause or you can continue listening. But I encourage you, go check out Wildcut Designs over on Instagram. That's wildcut_designs. Or you can jump over to our website, wildcutdesigns.com.au. And I would encourage you, go check it out because she's doing some amazing things. I'm not here to sell you anything or anything like that, but it's a great conversation where I learn a lot, but also it's just a great conversation to hear someone else and their journey to build out something that they're passionate about, to build a business, and hopefully make a big impact to the world. So buckle up, let's dive in. Hi, Karina. Welcome to the Further Your Lifestyle podcast. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Thanks.
No, that's
Thanks
good.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you are so welcome. Now, you're doing very exciting things. When I first reached out to you, I didn't really know how much you were doing, but you're all things gemstones. You've got a business called Wildcut Designs, and that's what we're here to talk about, essentially that journey to get to that point in actually building out a business and, I guess, your passion. But to help the audience get to know you so I don't have to sell you, you can sell yourself. Who are you and what are you all about?
So my name's Karina Tucci. I'm a qualified gemologist. And I specialize in sourcing and looking at gemstones and diamonds, but I'm also a qualified and registered valuer. So I can assess and appraise things. I can diagnose certain things. It's a bit like sometimes forensics when we're looking at a diamond or a stone to figure out what it might be. So I do lots of different things, but yeah, my new passion is Wildcut Designs, which is more the retail side of the jewelry industry.
And like, this is what fascinates me, because if someone comes and asks, what do you do for a living? Or, you know, do you say you're a gemologist, or like, is that right?
I often do. I say I'm a gemologist and registered valuer, but most people think I say germologist. And I'm like, and they go, what? You work with germs? No, it's gems. And it's something that even my husband had to Google when he met me, because he was like, what's a gemologist? But he didn't want to like say anything, so he Googled it the next day just to, you know, have something to talk about. But yeah, it is a very niche market. So it's a small little world, a small little industry. I also teach as well and help mentor new gemologists and upcoming valuers. So I'm very active in the industry in terms of education and, and all that kind of stuff.
I have to ask, and like, I'm already diving into detail, but I'm very curious, and I'm sure people are probably thinking, well, there's so many gemstones out there. Like, I mean, you think about it, so many people are getting married, people are getting jewelry, especially, you know, in a female's industry, you know, everyone's wearing jewelry. I don't wear jewelry, so I don't really know it that well. But, you know, when it comes to that, you would think it'd be quite a big niche. Is there any reason why it is such a small niche, or is that more just because of Australia's industry, or just because we are a smaller side of the world? Or
I guess jewelry as a whole is a huge industry.
Yeah.
But to be special specialized and qualified as I am is kind of more like a niche.
Okay.
Some people will just study gemology and stop at that.
Right.
I'm kind of just, you know, a sucker and a bit of a nerd that I just like to put myself through pain and keep educating. So, yeah, like I guess it depends on how far you want to take me. And I really, when I was studying gemology, I really loved diving into the gemstone and learning about that gemstone. And then my goal was always to become an appraiser and valuer.
Okay.
To kind of do more like that forensic work and break down the piece and figure out exactly.
Okay. No, that makes sense. And I guess, you know, maybe if we take a step back, because I know when we first met up and we chatted, I know that, you know, this was not originally what you had intended to be doing. You know, back in the day when you first, you know, whether it was going through high school and, you know, wanting to do something else, your background, I believe, started in hospitality. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. So I'm Italian background. So obviously cooking is a huge part of my life. I had no choice in the matter. So I was in hospitality and I did like my vet course. It was back then, it was a bit different how you went through school. And I did my vet course in hospitality. And then I was working at a restaurant. And I loved it. I love cooking and I liked running the restaurants and all that stuff. But I started to get unwell, a bit of pain in my joints and stuff like that. And I was very young, maybe 17, 18, discovered that I had fibromyalgia.
Jeepers.
And from then onwards, I started to gather autoimmune issues, like little trophies almost. So I kind of had to rethink my whole career path.
Wow.
And my best friend's mum used to sell like costume jewelry at a market and gemstones. And someone gave me like a Larimer stone and said, you know, hold this and it will help with your pain. And then that kind of like triggered something off me. I started like researching crystals and healing properties. And back then it was quite different. Now it's like a real in thing. But that back then I was like a bit of a weirdo for looking at all these things in a spiritual way. And then I just dove into that. And then my friend's mum goes, well, why don't you study gemology? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is that? Looked it up and thought, yeah, this is really cool. And then moved to Queensland at 19 and studied gemology. And, did all that while I was scrubbing tables down to pay to put myself through the course. And I haven't stopped since then. I've just been going and going and going. So in a way, my health has gotten worse, but in a way it led me to what I'm doing now. And I'm grateful for that.
That's something to like really, it's a big struggle to take on at such a young age, you know, before even getting to like adulthood, you know, to kind of be thrown into the deep end and said, hey, by the way, you can't do this now because you've got all these problems with your, you know, with your health. And I can't even, you know, I can't even fathom that, because especially when you dedicate time into something that you want to do or that you think you love and excited to go pursue, and then to have, you know, these things pop up. And I know you said, you know, you were kind of able to adapt, but can you kind of recall like going through that? Because a lot of the time when we start our passions, a lot of the time it's from a silver lining of something that happens. In this case, it was, you know, that came along and it made you make a change. You know, in the last 2 years we've had COVID and a lot of people have, you know, started to pursue their own passions. But for you, how did that actually kind of hit home with you? Because I'm guessing it probably wasn't just like, okay, all good, I'll just do the next thing. Like, how did you deal with that? Because I feel like there's a lot of things that happen in people's lives and it's overwhelming to deal with at first until you kind of find that next path.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a long time ago and I don't know. I think sometimes when things come along and you're young, you can handle them a bit better.
That's true.
And I feel like I just, I don't know, just took it on the chin and moved on. I guess I never really knew what I wanted to do school. And hospitality, like I said, cooking was just always there. So I guess it, in a way, and it comes back to the spiritual kind of stuff, like it was just fate that that landed in my lap and it put me on the path, the right path. And I suppose I was probably waiting to find what I wanted to do. And I guess my health also pushed me to go out completely on my own, because I actually like it can't hold a job, like to be able to be somewhere every morning at 9 a.m. is very difficult for me. So, again, it pushed me to start Wildcat. So I suppose, like, through the tough times, some positive things have come from that, and that's not a bad thing. I just I have to learn to adapt. I kind of have no choice in the matter. I have to just every time something happens, and I just have to get on with life.
And it's really good. And not to say that, you know, it's going to be easy for everyone, and that it wasn't easy, but it sounds like the way it happened, it kind of, the way you took it was, whether it was with great willpower or you just had a positive attitude. I'm glad it didn't stump you, because I do hear a lot of people that they all these things pop up and you think it's the end of the world, but then as you go through, and obviously now we can look back with hindsight and think, oh, I'm so glad this happened, because now you are where you are, right? And it you can be grateful for that, but in the moment it can be quite overwhelming. But no, that's exciting to hear. And you know, let's jump a little further. And you said, you know, you started studying and now you are doing this full time. So the gap in between there, because, you know, if anyone jumps over to your website and has a look at all your certifications, it is a long, long, long list. So like, how many years of study have you done? And I know you've done very niche, and we're going to dive into a bit more of what a day-to-day looks like. But to go through the process of studying, how long has that process kind of taken?
The thing is, I never stop. Again, I'm a glutton for punishment. And if there's a course out there, I want to do it. I'm sick. Like, and that list isn't even my full list, because there's a lot of little ones in between. And I'm like, just skip all those. Yeah. Probably like a good 12 years. But at the same time, you, as a qualified and registered valuer, you have to keep up with professional development. So it's kind of comes with the territory. And also as an educator as well, I have to make sure I know what's happening around, and I'm like, I'm reading all the articles and doing all the new courses that are out there and keeping up to date, because then if I get a question or I need to teach, I need to also be, you know, really up to date and try to hold myself at a really high level of education. But I still feel like I don't know everything, and I still feel like I'm stumped on some things, and I still learn every day. Like, it's crazy how quickly the industry changes as well. Like, from one day to the next,
And that's what we want. I mean, if you weren't learning, it sounds like you'd be pretty bored, right? And it sounds like you enjoy the learning process and always wanting to, you know, be a bit better. But do you think that comes from because you have this big goal or audacious goal to be the best and the biggest, or is it just because you're simply curious, or is it a bit of both?
Well, I don't know if I'd said that was my goal, but that kind of is my goal. That is kind of what I kind of aim for and set the bar high. I set the bar high for myself. I don't find myself very intelligent. I find it difficult to learn. So it's a hard work for me, but I'm so passionate about it. That I think that's where it comes from. It's my passion to learn and to know different things. And again, like I said, I have to make sure that if someone asks me a question, I know the answer, or I know where to get the answer. Yeah. That's important.
It's really good. And I know we're going to chat about a few different things, and it's probably actually a really good segue, because, you know, one of the areas I kind of wanted to dive into a bit more and take a bit more meaning behind is, you know, the journey of knowing what you want and, you know, having to work for that. And you've kind of just said it there that, you know, you know, to yourself, you feel like, oh, maybe you're not that intelligent, or it's harder for you to study. But because you have that passion, you have that drive, it probably makes it a little bit easier for you to push through. But I guess, you know, it's one of those cliches where people say, oh, how did you get to where you are today? It's like, oh, a lot of hard work. It's like, yes, we know that. but, you know, like, is there moments during that hard work or any, I guess, points that you can mention around, you know, where you kind of have struggled with it or where you've had to kind of, you know, have that deep conversation with yourself? No, if I want this, I need to be willing to do this. Or has it just been because you've been so motivated for that end result and you're seeing that continuous drive that it's enabled you to kind of do it, you know, turning the cheek and making it quite easy?
A bit of both, I suppose. I had a really good teacher going through gemology who, because like I'm a bit dyslexic, so okay. I would really struggle on the theoretical side of things, and he would sit me down and he'd go, Karina, I know you know this. Like, and he'd write out like what I was telling him to like help me get to the point I needed to get to. And that really helped me to get along. Also I had some fabulous mentors up in Queensland who were just there, always there guiding me and helping me. Some of the older valuers in Queensland really took me under their wing. And I guess that's maybe why I now, it's almost like paying it back and paying it forward. Like I want to help people as well. And people guided me and backed me and said, you've got this, like keep going. And yeah, so I had some good support. And that was just through, because obviously I didn't know anyone moving states. I just moved on my own. That was just through networking and just getting to know people. And yeah, I just built like my own little community and they helped me get through. Yeah.
And you kind of said like you're trying to, you know, you want to be the best, but I guess one of the pros of being a small industry is it's not like you can compare yourself to many others. So I guess you have to, your only person you can compare to is yourself. And I get, and it's kind of, for me, the only way I could probably relate to that is like with running, you know, when you do your first run, you're like, okay, you got a baseline, but then you go out and do a bit more and you're like, oh, I was a bit quicker or, you know, different stats. So you can start to compare against yourself. And yeah. The beauty for you is because you are in that smaller niche, you kind of get to, yeah, as you said, you get to set the bar for yourself and what that looks like. So it probably makes it somewhat easier because it's harder to feel like you're not getting ahead. But at the same time, it's a catch 22 at the same time, I would feel. But that's cool, yeah.
I think also support, like my husband has supported me from day one, and without him I probably wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing. Yeah, and yeah. He just completely backs me as well. And I do set really high goals for myself, but I've always done that, and I think that's what gets me through. It's like I don't think that's impossible. If I keep working, I can get there. And I started a lot younger than most. And even to this day, some people, I walk in the room, they like look at me like, you look like you're 10. Yeah. Like, no. Been doing this for a while. So yeah, I think the right people to back you and good support, I have to set big goals, and that's how you achieve and continue to achieve.
That's true, because once again, coming back to being a smaller industry, no one else is necessarily going to tell you what you can or what you should be, because you know, when you compare to like a saturated market, or you know, think about influencers for instance, right? You know, everyone's telling you need to be doing this, you need to be doing that, or if you're trying to make a living online and stuff like that, there's so much to compare to. Whereas you, it's kind of like, well, because it's smaller, it gives you that advantage, and then also being younger even gives you that better advantage, because now you're going to be so much further ahead at such a young age. And it's probably, is that because it's probably an older industry, like it's, or is it just because it is so small that there hasn't been many people coming through?
Yeah, a bit of both. I remember once we went on this fossicking excursion in Queensland, and I was there digging a hole, and I was like, my hole was huge, because I was just like, yeah, get in this hole. And everyone else was like, oh, and I really did feel young that day.
Okay.
There's a lot of young people now. I just think when I started, at 19, like, at that time, it was more of an older demographic.
Yep.
And I suppose more male-led as well.
Yeah.
and again in Queensland. It's very different now, though. Yeah, there's a lot of very successful female jewellery businesses, okay, which is great. Times have changed as well in terms of that, which
that's
is
good.
Yeah, considering that we're the ones that wear the jewellery.
Very true, very true. And
I think it's a good thing.
and you mentioned that, you know, you moved to Queensland and that was to study. And coming back to kind of pros and cons of being a small industry, is that because that's kind of like the only place you can study it, or is it just because that's what you wanted to do as well? Or
just to have a move, but yeah, also where I lived in Melbourne, we lived in the bush, and the association headquarters, you could call it, is in the city. Right. And I would have had to like train or drive in, and I just didn't like that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have probably done that. I wouldn't have felt safe, I suppose. So why not move to states?
Yeah.
More safe. And it was, yeah, it was different. Just I'm glad I studied up there because I and lived up there for the time I did, because I met some incredible people.
Yeah.
And Melbourne is such a bigger industry.
Okay.
So Brisbane was a lot smaller. So it was quite a cute little niche people, whereas here it's like there is people everywhere. So
for some reason, I would see it the other way. Like, because I think it's just maybe it's stereotypical generalization, but when I think Brisbane, I think because it's closer to the outback or more closer to outdoors, just because it's so much bigger out that way, that would be more open to, you know, fossicking, for instance, and things like that. Whereas Melbourne, it's such a busy, you know, environment.
Oh, there is for that, like up north.
Yeah, right.
Like
okay.
In the gem field, absolutely. But I'm talking Brisbane as a city. It's pretty small.
Yeah, that's true. That
like
is true.
You can walk from one end to the other in like seconds and see how people that you know. Whereas I'm in Melbourne, I'm just like, oh, my God.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah.
Have you travelled anywhere else from this, like to study, or has it opened up, you know, international opportunities and things like that too?
I've studied with international bodies and worked with international experts overseas a lot online, especially COVID. But yeah, I've managed to make some amazing friends overseas, and you know, they've been great as well. But that's all kind of like more my trade side of the business.
Yep.
Whereas Wildcut really, Wildcut's like more the retail side, but it's not it's not really retail. It's more like a unique custom experience for my clients, and that is quite niche as well, because I'm really trying to promote Australian gems and diamonds, and try and support Australian people as well.
So
Australian fossickers, Australian jewelers. I don't send anything offshore. I don't buy anything offshore. I don't get anything made overseas.
Wow.
I try to have everything made here. Some gemstones can't come from here. So obviously I have some gemstones from overseas, but I used to be a wholesaler as well.
Okay. Wow. All areas.
So I used to travel around Australia selling gemstones.
That's so cool.
But again, because the industry started to change, people started to go direct, kind of squished the wholesalers out a little bit. And then obviously COVID happened, so there was no trade shows overseas. So, like, again, kind of thought, you know what, like, I'm just going to put all of my energy into what I've always wanted to do, and that was Wildcut. So I have amazing contacts for gemstones as well.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Which is kind of a huge advantage.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Know where to source things and stuff.
And I guess with your credentials and then building that credibility as well, you know, when you are starting to work with other players or, you know, in that ecosystem, they're going to think, oh, this person knows what they're about. You're not just some random trying to get gemstones for cheap. You know, that's how I can imagine that, because you're coming with a reputation, expertise, there's going to be that trust. And I guess they'll say, oh, this person's genuine, and it opens you up to so many more doors.
Absolutely. And I often get new jewelers asking me for, you know, oh, we're like suppliers and stuff. But it really does come down to a trust relationship and building that network yourself. And we teach that as well, like go out there and get to know who's around you, get to know, build relationships, because other people in the industry are invaluable to helping you get to where you want to be.
And that's such, you know, relevant advice for, I think, anyone doing anything, right? I mean, you know, there's that classic saying, it's not about what you know, but who you know. You know, at the end of the day, whether it's your mentors or the people you network with, or, you know, even us, how we've connected, we've met through mutual friends. And, you know, it just goes to show of, you know, how crazy just the conversation can lead to, right? And I think that's the beauty of it, especially when you're operating your own business or your own, you know, empire or whatever, because it really comes down to your word, your reputation, your brand, and then what that offers for someone else and how you can help each other.
Yeah. And I think that the fact that I do it all myself and source everything myself, like I know everything about the whole piece. And I can provide certification for it as well. It really is the whole process done by one person. I've always wanted to keep everything like that. And my clients really enjoy the unique experience I offer. I don't have a shop. I'm mobile, so I can go to a person's house and have a consultation with them in a comfortable environment without feeling any pressure that they need to buy or, you know, for sale. It's really just let's have a cup of tea and chat. And I did my first diamond event the other day, which was really fun. I had lots of jewelry and diamonds and I just had a group of my mum's friends.
Yep.
And they just, you know, it's just a bit of fun to hang out and look at jewelry and also speak about what's possible. So, you know, some of the ladies had some jewelry they wanted to get remodeled.
Yep.
Oh, do you do that? I'm like, yes, of course. Like, let's look at your things and let's scribble down some ideas. And it's all about just having conversations and chatting and then realizing, actually I know someone or I need this done or, it's really fun to do those sort of things.
So let's talk about it then. So Wildcut Designs, right? And you do everything from literally from the fossicking of the stones to cleaning them to hand making them to cutting them. But then also you do, as you mentioned, you know, the consultation and actually working with clients, actually building out whether it's, you know, building the piece of jewelry or the engagement ring or what that may look like. So, you know, what does a day in a life look like? Or help us understand what does Wildcut Designs actually do end to end?
Yeah, so I guess try and source majority of the stones from people that I know personally that have dug them or sieved them out.
That's so cool. This is so cool.
And if you look on my Instagram page, you'll see a little fast motion video of me in the mud looking gross, getting some sapphires out of Little River. So that, and then they get hand cut in by a lapidarist either in Tasmania or on the mainland, but in Australia still.
Yep.
Then I'll design something and then I'll have it made by my jeweler here in Melbourne. But it really depends because every single client I have wants something different. So it doesn't matter how much stock I have or how much inventory I've got, like I guarantee that from one person to the next, their ideas will be completely different. And I think that's the best thing about custom pieces and bespoke pieces. It's you're also the creator. Like you tell me what you want and let me bring that to life.
Yeah.
So people have a lot of ideas themselves. And a lot of times that particular piece isn't just on a shelf in a jewelry store. Yeah. They want to have it custom designed. I just made one for a lady who, again, I met through Instagram, which was lovely, and we made a ring called Starry Night. And the stones used in that were 5 sapphires to symbolize her daughter's birthstone, and then 4 opals to symbolize her, wow, her son. And she wanted stars and moons in there, and all had meaning and meaningful meaning. And that was really cool and something different, something I hadn't done before. And we worked together till we got to where she wanted to be and where I was happy with to produce.
I guess that, once again, it brings such an amazing advantage, because you're never going to find something like that, because it's not going to be mass produced and it's not going to be able to be, can't walk into a jewelry, you know, down in the middle of Bourke Street or something in Melbourne and say, oh, yeah, that's the one exactly I've been envisioning in my head, which I know obviously a lot of people have these ideas of what they want because that's all they see and what's marketed to them.
Yes.
But exactly. I guess probably a big question someone would ask, you know, listening to this or probably comes to your business is like, so by doing such a custom and end-to-end process, does that mean the price tag is quite high? Or how do you manage that? But then I would think also having the leverage of your networks, it means you can kind of manage that quite well too.
Look, I guess in a sense they're higher because it's handmade.
Yep.
And when I say handmade, it's actually handmade from a bar of gold rolled out.
That's so cool.
Crafted, not wax cast, polished up.
Yep.
So that process, because you're paying for labor, is a bit more than, say, if I just ordered a ring from overseas, which would be mass produced.
Correct. I wouldn't even know how much rings cost.
Yeah.
But and like, could you give it a comparison? Like, and it's not here to say that, oh, look, you know, you're charging so much, but I want people to help understand, like, the craft that you bring, you know, and then the dollar that's behind that, you know, it's not just
And I wouldn't say I'm very expensive, because I don't have a lot of overheads, and I'm very, very
lean,
which isn't great for me. But I don't, like, if you compare to a shop in town, I'm by far cheaper than
Okay, that's incredible.
There's not, I'm not the only one that's doing what I'm doing.
Yep.
A lot of shops that I've worked for or work with do handmade bespoke pieces as well.
Yeah, and I guess, as you said, it's not like you have a shop front, you don't have some of that infrastructure that you have to carry around with you. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you probably, if you compare me to, so that's more like bespoke luxury. But you really couldn't compare me to like a costume jewelry, because that's not comparing to things.
Yeah, it's not apples to apples. Yeah,
So you know, there's a lot of people doing moissanite or cubic zirconia engagement rings or synthetic gemstone rings. Yep. You can't compare me to that because I'm not mass producing it, and I'm not using synthetic. I'm using real gemstones that people have found, cut, and it's handmade ring. It's two completely different markets.
Yeah.
And usually people know what they want. They either want, the fake moissanite ring and they're happy with that, or they want something really different and really sentimental and you know, unique, and they want to have kind of a hand in designing it as well. So kind of two different markets. So when people say it's expensive, I kind of, it isn't. I know it's not, because I've worked in high-end shops as well.
Yeah, okay.
I've managed a high-end boutique. That's expensive. So this isn't expensive. And it depends. It depends what
Your appetite is, what you're purchasing.
What do you class is expensive when,
well, that's right, you know, I have no idea, but when you play it that way, I think, you know, probably when we think about jewelry, or we'll just talk about rings once again, I think there's probably this generalization that, you know, the bigger the better, the more expensive, but the way you kind of just said it makes you think, well, those could be very superficial and you wouldn't even necessarily know, you know, where they've come from. Are they legitimate? You know, are they, you know, being fossil locally, or are they just synthetic, et cetera, versus yours is all handmade. It's sentimental. It's not about being big and better. I mean, it could be because it's custom made, but you can't put a price on that sentiment, on that sentimental value, essentially, because you can't go buy that somewhere unless it's handmade, like in this situation.
Yeah. I think as well, like a lot of the stones I use are quite unique in themselves that, like you said before, you couldn't go find it on the shop somewhere. But then sometimes I do really classic things with colourless diamonds that, yeah, you could go get it at a big store if you wanted to.
Yeah, okay.
My price is probably going to be cheaper, but that's because, again, like I'm small, I don't have overheads. I have respect for everyone in the industry and everyone has a place in the industry. So the luxury brands have their place as well. I have my place. And then the people who sell more costume jewelry type stuff, they have their place as well. I'm not interested in competing with anyone.
Yeah.
I just believe that through word of mouth, success will come, and it's a slow process. And you know, it just takes time. It takes time to build up. And when people, like I said, I think people know what they want, and if they're wanting something unique, like a Australian sourced sapphire.
Yeah.
They're going to research and look it up, and they might come across me or they may not. There's lots of other people that do it as well. And then I can help them find something. So I just did another ring, which we had a Queensland sapphire, a Tasmanian sapphire, and a Western Australian argyle white diamond. And this lady was really important to have everything sustainable and ethically sourced. So I kept all the stones from Australia. I knew exactly who dug the stones out of the ground, who cut the stones, who made the ring, designed it, everything. So that was a really special ring. And I think that's more where I want to be, is people that want that sort of stuff. And I also explained to her, which a lot of people don't know, but like all of my packaging is all sustainably sourced as well. So everything's recycled. My boxes are handmade with Australian sustainably sourced Jarrah wood. My cards, my tissue paper.
Wow.
Everything is like from a recycled company or sustainably sourced, ethically sourced. Like when I started it, that was always my dream. And that cost me a lot more money, but I don't necessarily put that cost onto the client.
Yeah.
But I don't. That's a cost that I'm willing to do because that's something that I believe in.
Yeah.
And that I want to tick those boxes and make sure I'm doing the best I can for the environment. And that's why also I don't have a huge range, because I don't want to make hundreds of rings and just have them sitting around. It's made to order and it's made uniquely with what you want it to be. So, you know, I do have some stock pieces, but yeah, everything. And that's just to reduce my impact and footprint on the earth.
Yeah.
So that was something I really was really important to me from day one, was all of my stuff had to be.
And it's such an important piece of, you know, especially doing business in the modern age as well. You know, a lot of people are choosing brands, you know, are you sustainable? How do you manage this? How are you doing this? How are you operating as a business? Well, where do you source from? You know, whether it's gemstones or anything in the world, right? You know, clothing, etc. And, you know, I think that's such a good thing to have, because for you building a brand, it makes so much sense, because that speaks even greater volumes of, you're not just out here to make a quick buck and, you know, move things quickly. But no, there's, you know, love, care going into this, but also the whole process and the greater, you know, the world and the impacts that you're making. So it's really beautiful in that sense. And, you know, there's a lot of people which they don't care about it at all. But I think, as I said, you know, in this later age, it's becoming a must. You know, you don't necessarily have a choice, because you start to get some pretty unhappy sentiments from people when you're not doing that. So kudos. I think that's really, really good.
I think everyone's trying to more make that move, and I think that's the way the future is going. So I just wanted to, And sometimes like little things like my thank you cards cost me so much more because they're on recycled paper. I'm like, no, like I need that. I want that. Cost me more, but it's important to me. So, it's a decision you have to make, and that is probably where a lot of the expense goes.
Yeah. Okay. So Yeah. So how long has Wildcat, how long have you been operating it for?
Nearly just a year.
Wow, really? I think I asked you this last time and I think I had the same reaction. But yeah. And if anyone hasn't gone and checked out your webpage and Instagram, we're going to do all that at the end. But when you look at it, like, it makes it seem like you're a longstanding brand that's been around for, I would say, at least 5 years. That's what it looks like. It's really, really good.
I think I've been doing it for a long time, though. And when I was, just doing trade work and wholesaling, like, I always designed and custom made things on the side for close friends and family. So I always kind of have done it. I just kind of, because of COVID, second time round, COVID, I think I decided, like, I'm just going to actually just put all my eggs in that basket and create a brand and create a kind of an exclusive kind of brand and put it all into that and go from there. And again, because I couldn't work, I couldn't hold a job. So it was like, I'm just going to just do this now. And so it kind of pushed me in that direction. And I've always wanted to do that, but never really had thought to kind of get it done. And that's why I just kind of stuck with, I guess, the trade side of it.
Yep.
So I still do both sides of the industry, which is just like a lot of juggling, but that's okay.
it's so cool. So that means you're basically coming up to your first like financial year of operating the business. That's so exciting. And like for me, I can resonate with that because this is my first year of doing my own business for a first full financial year as well. And it's just exciting because you get to build your own baseline. You get to start back from zero again for the new year and you get to take all the things that you've learned and then go and reapply it and hopefully hit the ground running for a better year. So that's really, really good. Like I'm really, really excited for you and I'm proud for you because the brands that you have created, like, I mean, I'm a guy. I don't like jewelry, right? But I love passion and I love seeing that very, it stands out just naturally. So you've done a really good job there.
Thanks.
I have a question for you. So in the last year then, and I know you've got a lot of, as we know, you've got a lot of background experience in the industry, but building that out, especially during COVID, any big challenges that kind of came your way, whether it's, whether it's fear or from a mental side or just in general trying to build out a business / passion, because I want to give back to the audience that's listening because there's people have all these ideas, people have all these dreams, whether they've got experience or not, but sometimes, they're worried about the worst case scenarios or the challenges. Is there anything you can talk about of dealing with one of those and how you got through it?
I think like not knowing when your next job is, like, you don't know when your next job is, and that can be a really scary thing, but I just try and stay positive and know that it will just happen organically and you just have to be patient. It is expensive to start. And that's because of all the stuff you need. Yeah. Like I mentioned, that was kind of stressful at the beginning, like sorting out and sourcing all of the different parts of the packaging, whatever, and then getting quotes and realizing, wow, okay.
It's a lot of upfront capital, I would assume.
Yeah, a lot. And I guess not being – like from a finance background, I really didn't understand too much about the tax world. So that's exciting. Not looking forward to the end of this year because I think that can be really stressful. And I think you need to find a really good accountant to help you and to guide you. Because for a small business, the first year is really, really hard.
Yes.
And stressful. So you do need support. You need like a partner or friends and a family that are there to support you. And like I said, I'm really happy that I'm really lucky that I've got my husband who's just backing me.
Yeah.
Because the first year, like you're basically just on 2-minute noodles because you don't pay yourself, you don't see any return. It's all just like reinvesting and you've just got to stick with it. And when I started wholesaling, that took me a couple years to really build relationships with people in the trade. And it's the same in this situation. Till you build amazing clients, and my clients are like friends. We hang out, we enjoy each other's company. You build a bond because you're creating something so special together. That just takes time. It's just, you just have to be patient. I feel like I'm lucky because I did have a little leg up because I was already in the industry for quite some time. But if I look back to when I first started out, it was really scary. I got a lot of doors slammed in my face and, but you just have to, you just have to stay positive and stick with it. And, I have moments where I come home and I'm like, oh, my God, like I need to get a job or do I need to do something? It's really stressful, especially with all these price rises in our world right now. But, you've just got to keep going and believe in yourself.
Now that's a real answer. I love it because it's kind of how I said to you before, there's that cliche around, how did you get so successful? It took 10 years of hard work. And that's it right there. That's the hard work, the day-to-day, the doubts, the challenges, and just, I think it really comes down to the passion, right? If you know what you want and you can see it and there's something there that's pointing in the right direction, even it might not be hundreds and thousands of dollars, but it's pointing in the right direction, well, you've only done 1 year. You've still got so much long before you can probably even start to realize, okay, this isn't working out. It's like for myself, I worked for 7-8 years before I started to do my own stuff. And now I've done 1 year. I can't compare that 1 year to me on my 8th year of working full time for someone else because it took me 8 years to get there, right? So if I compare myself in 8 years' time of doing my own job, my own business, and I can think, I actually haven't gotten any further, or I'm not further than where I was in 8 years working for someone else, then I can fairly say it's like, maybe this isn't working for me, unless I'm already happy and, et cetera. I'm probably talking more from a monetary value, but we have to be able to set those baselines and comparisons. But I guess for you, now you've got your first year and you've accomplished it, you've done it, and now the world's your oyster. You get to charge on and fine tune it and try again. And I'm really excited for you. And I want to ask you, what's your, if you want to share it, of course, what's your big dream for Wildcut Designs?
For Wildcut Designs, I just want to, it's not about like having thousands and thousands of followers. I just want to create unique, individual, bespoke pieces for people and kind of build relationships with clients, make friends with clients and get them what they want. It doesn't matter if I don't have the social media following or any of that stuff. Yeah. It's not about like being the biggest and the best. If I can just keep doing what I'm doing and giving that service, then I'm happy. I'm happy. And it's just all like a word of mouth.
Which I was going to say, like with that kind of business, unless you are doing a lot of the same thing, that's the only way you're going to be able to sell it, is because someone's going to say, oh, no, I want something custom, therefore I need to go to you to get that done.
I don't know if I have any cemented like goals. I just want to keep doing what I'm doing and keep doing it right. Keep making people happy. Creating things. I love meeting new people and designing rings with them and seeing the end product and seeing them open it for the first time. And I just want to keep doing it. I just want it to keep going.
No, that's good. I mean, and there's no right or wrong answer to it. It's like I said, it's a beautiful brand. What you're doing is, I mean, I'm not trying to overhype it. People need to go check it out for themselves, but it really does shine. And once again, I'm trying to say that, it's not like I'm looking at jewelry all the time or anything. I saw it and that's how I reached out to you, right? Originally. Yeah. So you've definitely created something there, which kind of looks magical and looks really, really well. So you're doing that to people that aren't, you're already reflecting that to people that aren't even necessarily buying. So, well, I think so anyway.
Yeah. And I think the whole, my whole message is that nature and environment, and that's why there's a lot of green.
Yeah.
And that's the wild side of things is you know, with nature. These things yeah. come from nature. They're so unique and special and rare. When I'm not working, I'm out in the bush.
I was just going to say,
nature.
I know that's what you like to do, and it's a good segue, because that was going to be the next thing I was going to ask you. So yeah. outside of Wildcut Designs, who is Karina? What is she doing? What
wild. Do you like to do? Wild. That's, I don't look like this. I look more like in the mud video. I really enjoy the bush camping and fishing. So I guess that's like also does tie in with the Fossa King, because it's like
it's ingrained in you.
Yeah, like being able to just go out in the bush and survive it out there for 5 days. I often have friends say they'd want to be with me if something happened because I'd be able to survive in the middle of nowhere. I love trekking and hiking, often do big treks in Tasmania. I just love being outdoors, and
I love it.
It's great. Yeah, that really comes through. Well, I hope it does, but that really is
does. I mean, that whole, I guess, identity is there, whether people know that that's what you're into or not. I don't think, you know, it needs to be known, but it definitely shines through, and now makes even more sense because, you know, your passion is then getting put into your passion and shows, which I have such a, I have a really random question because I'm just super curious. Have you ever like been metal gold detecting and found like gold and then used that for like your jewelry, or is that
just, no?
I had a friend. He actually found the gold. Like he would. It's not really a friend. It's just someone I used to work with and knew. But he actually went and he found all the gold, and then he found the gemstones, and then he forged it and made this. I'm probably not as good looking as your rings, but he made the ring for his now wife, and he proposed to his fiance with that. But that in itself is just super cool. Like, it took him a long time to do.
Someone asked me this the other day, so random that you said that, because they go, oh, like, do you find the gold as well?
Yeah.
Obviously when you're out in the rivers where there's gemstones, or say the diamond mine or whatever, then there's probably, well, especially in Australia, gold rush might be gold. But to find enough, so that's pure gold.
Yep.
Then it has to be alloyed.
Yep.
To then be made into a ring. So I probably need like quite a decent amount. Send it to the gold people. Then they would mix it up and make the solution, the potion. And then I'd get it back in the bar, and then I could make the ring. But it does, so 18 karat yellow gold is 75 parts pure.
Okay.
So if you see 18 karat, it'll say 750.
Right.
75%.
Oh, there you go, so learning something.
The rest is just like different alloys to make it strong enough and hard enough to be able to wear in a ring. So usually we in Australia, we tend to use 9 carat or 18 carat or platinum. But for engagement rings, we tend to stick with 18 and platinum because of their hardness. Because like just everyday stuff, people that work in offices, I've seen the back of their rings really damaged from opening filing cabinets. I've seen we hold our keys in our hand. So you need the gold to be strong, like diamonds but your gold is going to be scratched and worn. So we tend to use 18 carat and platinum. And then if you like 22 and 24 carat, that's that really, really pure gold, which is used in a lot of like that Indian wedding jewelry and stuff like that.
Right.
Quite beautiful, but very soft that you could possibly like bend it with your hand because it's closest to being pure.
I feel like we're doing a Mythbusters right now. No, so, like, I mean, I had no idea. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I guess if someone goes, oh, like I just want 9 carat or they silver, I want a silver engagement. Silver is very, very soft. You just bend it sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes I can squish rings, silver rings. So it wouldn't really last generations. Because I always say to people that have or really want really, really fine bands, it's kind of like a thing right now. But, you know, an engagement ring is supposed to last generations.
Yeah, and true.
Then you hand that down and it becomes like an heirloom in the family. And if you make it really thin or with gold or silver that's not hard enough, it's not going to last 5 years. It's going to like break in the first two. So I think sometimes, I like to always also make things that are going to last.
100%. I mean, it's
durable to stand to make it through day to day wear and tear.
Okay. No, I was super curious because I think it would be the coolest thing to find the gold and that, which, you know, and once again, it helps give perspective of like, it's not that simple, but in some sense it is. Like, you know, finding gemstones, you're still going to go through a big, long process. Because, you know, I have done gemstone fossicking back in Tasmania. I'm sure because this is probably like 16 years ago. Yeah. We met a guy and he was kind of, we met him twice because we were traveling around Tasmania and we met him at the bottom and at the top. And he taught us how to do it. And we found a couple of little sapphires and things like that. And, you know, and that's probably why it resonates with me so much because to be able to, and I've done gold metal detecting before.
Yeah.
And to be able to find the thrill of finding, right? And then to think, well, then if you found it, then take it and make it into something. That is just, it's mind-blowing.
It's a long process. And sometimes you can be, you could look for weeks and find a cuttable stone. You could just find, we call them bombs, not cuttable, not gem quality. You know, you've got to find a pretty nice crystal because also the stone, you lose a lot when you're cutting that stone.
True. Down.
So if you find one that's that big, the stone cut is not going to be that big.
It's of course. It's not going to wear that on your on your finger.
So it takes like, you know, it takes time. These take a lot of time. Everything's a process.
Yeah. Well, I love this. And I mean, look, we could chat for hours and I want to leave it open in that sense so people can reach out to you. But before we do wrap up, I want to go for a segment of rapid fire questions just so people can get to know you and a bit more outside of, you know, wild cut designs and, you know, keep them short and sharp. But if you want to dive into anything, by all means, you can. So the first one is favorite book you have read or listened to?
Oh. Howl's Moving Castle. I'm a massive Ghibli fan. Yes.
Yeah. I love asking this question because I always get something weird and different and wonderful from everyone. So it's really good.
Yeah.
You win $10,000 today, no strings attached. What are you doing with it?
Investing it in my business.
good answer. I love it. Your favorite destination?
Tasmania.
Oh, Tasmania is so good, isn't it? Yeah, it really is.
Love it.
Why? Why Tasmania?
I do lots of trekking, as I mentioned, and I just love putting in a backpack and being stuck out in the wilderness for 10 days, even though one time my partner's first adventure with me, we got stuck in a blizzard.
Oh, gosh.
That wasn't fun. We thought we were going to die and we thought we'd have to, you know, maybe eat one or someone eat one of us or I don't know, like we were thinking all sorts of things were going through our head that day. We were delirious and it was just like you get to the hut. But like also there's like such thrill in that.
Yeah.
Also I'd have to say Tasmania and Africa. I spent 2 months in Africa and did some crazy, I'm an adrenaline junkie there.
Wow.
And that was just the people and the places were just out of this world. And I hope one day I get to go back.
Oh, that's exciting. Cool. Favorite movie or TV show? And I know this is going to be a big can of worms because I know you love a lot.
I'm such a big nerd. So that's hard because let's stick with the things that are tattooed on my body. so I'll say Star Wars, obviously. Yep.
Love it.
Star Wars, it just like all-time classic. Yep. Stargate as a TV show. And then Studio Ghibli's.
Wow. Love it. That in itself just tells a big story of everything that you like.
I'm a weirdo. Like, yeah.
There's nothing weird about it. It's completely cool. And the last one is, what would you tell yourself? What would you tell your teenage self?
Just don't give up. Just keep going. Just follow your passions and your dreams, and don't let anyone tell you that your dreams are too wild and crazy and big. Just keep with it. Kind of what I've done anyway. So
That's it. And what I love about, and I've heard that probably, I've asked my guests exactly the same question every time. And I think probably 80% of them have said that. And it's just so true. And I know it's easy for us to say now because we have the hindsight and we've gone through the process. But at the end of the day, we're really just the start of our bigger, long journeys anyway. It's just that we might be 1, 5, or 10 years ahead of someone else that's starting. And it's so true. It really comes back to that whole thing that I said at the start, you know, like it really just does take that hard work. And that hard work might just mean keep going and keep believing in yourself and pushing through.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love it. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you. It's been a wonderful experience and there's been lots that we've discussed and I've learned a lot. So thank you. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, kind of the same question. It's like, if there's anything that you would leave with the audience, is there anything you want to share?
If you're wanting to buy jewelry or an engagement ring, just it's not come to me, I'm the best. Just go to someone like a boutique jewelry store that's got a great reputation. Don't just try and go for the cheapest thing because more often than not, you get what you pay for.
Yep.
Do your research. And I sometimes am happy to take a phone call and help people guide them into finding the right place for them. It doesn't have to be me. I know a lot of fabulous jewelry shops in the city around Melbourne, in other states. Just make sure you just, yeah.
Do your due diligence.
Yeah. Just do research and go to a nice boutique and support Australian made.
Yeah.
And support Australia, just in general. Support small business. That's what I'm all about.
Helping
everyone here because we've got some great artisans and we've got some great resources here. Let's utilize them.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Well, you heard it here, folks. So where's the best place to come find out about you? Instagram, website?
Yeah, you can hop on my Instagram or my website. Yep, anything. Okay. Yep, you've got my details on there, how to contact me. Yep. You can message or an email. Yeah, happy to have a chat, like I said.
Too easy. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it so much. It's been a great conversation. And as I said, so much, I mean, we've really just touched the tip of the iceberg here. I feel like we could go on hours about this, but if you are curious, folks, go reach out to Karina and go have the conversation. If there's something here that maybe it's to do with actually you're wanting to buy something, or maybe it is just you're just curious and wanting to understand more, or maybe you just like that she's a nerd and you want to chat about that, whatever it may be. Don't be shy. Do go reach out.
Talk about the new Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's
fun. Yes. Oh, so good. So good. No spoilers here, though.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, and you have a wonderful day. Cheers.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. And I just really, really want to say thank you to Karina once again for jumping on and having this conversation. You know, what I love about everything that she's created is she's not doing it for money. She's not doing it because, you know, necessarily because she wants people to see her or anything like that. She's doing it because she enjoys it. She's doing it because she loves it. And more so, she's doing it because she wants to make a difference to the earth and to the environment. And by creating this brand, she's doing that exactly. She's meeting the needs of people and to be able to build sentiments and sentimental value and to help capture moments and memory. But also, she's being able to take what she loves and also help others, but also do it sustainably and make the world a better place while doing it too. If you're curious about anything that we chatted about today, make sure you do hit up Karina over at Wildcut Designs. All the details are in the show notes below. And maybe you are curious and maybe you are looking for some jewelry or something like that. go over there and have a conversation and see if she can help you. But also, if there was just any questions that you had, she's more than happy to have a conversation or a phone call or something like that as well. Really do appreciate you being here. It's been an absolute pleasure to have Karina on the podcast. You have a wonderful day. Cheers. Now, if you didn't know, we do have the podcast merch, and this is with a key focus of enamel pins. Now, if you haven't checked these out, make sure you do, because the intent of these are really just to be a small token and a reminder for you to charge on, to push on, and to further your lifestyle, whether it is a gift for someone else to encourage them or maybe to inspire them, or maybe it's a way to motivate yourself, or you can simply just make a purchase to simply support the podcast, which would be greatly appreciated. We do also have some sweaters and some long tees, so make sure you check it out. Link in the description and in the show notes. Really do appreciate it. Cheers.